Hello, my name is Dr. Deborah Verholden, and welcome to At the Forefront. Welcome to At the Forefront with Dr. Deb. I'm here with one of my favorite folks, one of my Flint partners, somebody who's been, on the team that originally hired me. You get to take credit for me being in Flint. You were on the board of community people that hired me. And I tell people all the time, I was chosen to be in Flint. Without that, I don't know that I would be there. It was one of the coolest things ever because at the end, I was actually worried, will they pick me? Will they like me? Right? Mm. And so I want to introduce our listeners to Miss Ella Green Moten. Ella, welcome to At the Forefront.
Thanks, Deborah. Great to be here. This is exciting. I'm just ready to hear more about it.
All right. So we got, Ella, there's 8,000 million topics that we can talk about. And I'm sure this is might be your first, but it will not be your last time on At the Forefront. Why? Because At the Forefront is a show for people about people who are at the forefront of the health equity revolution. Mm-hmm. These are people out on the skinny branches doing the work, embodying the work, partnering, advocating, activating to see that the work be done. One of the things that I think makes this podcast a little bit different is I've chosen to highlight the work of my colleagues, both community, academic, philanthropic, etc. And I've also got a little area over to the side where I've shared some more personal details and things about my life that I think will give people a better understanding of why I do the work that I do. Because I think it's important that people understand who's behind the work.
Right.
To understand that we all face and experience the same thing.
Absolutely.
So I was grateful that you and I had an opportunity to talk about a pending docuseries that I'm working on called The Health Equity Revolution. And the first part of that is called The Black Tax. Mm. And the assertion with Black Tax is that Blacks and African Americans specifically, people say a lot about people of color and colored folks and Black, brown, and yellow folks. And I don't take away anything from that, but I want to talk explicitly and specifically about the plight of Black people and what I call the Black tax, which is paying an excess and much higher price for inequity and inequality than does everybody else.
Absolutely.
So we are on the road. We're here at the annual American Public Health Association conference.
Yay.
And I said, you know what? We're going to take this opportunity to meet with people, to talk to people. So I'm glad that I had a chance to talk with you. And I wanna touch on a couple things. The first is I wanna make sure that people know who we're talking to. Mm-hmm. So Ella, you have played a very critical role in our health equity work in Flint. You are the community co-lead for the methodology core for the Flint Center for Health Equity Solutions.
Right.
NIH funded center. So with that, you probably know more about basic science and methods than a lot of folks coming out of the academy even.
So just live experience. But I think for me, I look at it as an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
To really put into action what I know and what I think I know and then learn more about what I don't know. Because we've been doing this work, right?
Yeah.
And it's important to understand. It's important for community folk to understand. And I am a community person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been afforded a lot of opportunities in the academic institution, but I am a community person. And I came in admitting that at a learning curve where this was concerned, but that's okay. Because I work with some great folk who are willing to share the information and help me grow, and I'm growing.
You have a teaching curve too.
Mm.
So you've got a curve for what you need to learn, and then you've got a curve for all of those that you need to teach and empower and impart knowledge and insight and information.
Absolutely.
About the community perspective.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
And so I also, again, just want to make sure people know who we're talking to. You also are the administrator and one of the co-founders of the CBOP Community Ethics Review Board.
Right. So the CERB is, it's one of those functions that's actually housed in the community core of the Healthy Flint Research Coordinating Center.
Yeah.
And the CERB gives community residents an opportunity to look at the research that's coming into Flint or to talk with researchers who are looking to do some kind of research in Flint, but looking at it from an ethical lens from the community. What are those things that could be potentially harmful to the community at large, not just the individual? So we get a chance to to review the work that's coming in and help some of the researchers see some of the stuff they never even think about, some of the little stuff, like how they're going to identify their participants, and will they offer incentives, and to say to them, well, I'm sorry, $5 is not enough. But just to say some of that little stuff to them that they never thought about, like, wow, really? No, it's not enough. You know, so it's just an opportunity to really help shape the research that's going on in Flint, understanding that these researchers don't have to come before the CERB.
Yeah.
So I had it known very early to CERB members, we're not here to slice and dice these researchers. That's not our role.
Yeah.
We're not here to tell them how specifically to do their research, because most of us don't know that.
Yeah.
But we do know what's ethical, what's right, what's, you know, between right and wrong for the community. So that's what we do. That's why we exist.
All right, I got one more thing that I want to throw out there, because then I want to segue into your work, Love, Passion for Young People, and get into this conversation around Black Tax, specifically focused on education and youth. You are the local chair, you are the chairwoman for the local chapter of AXO, which is Academic, Cultural, Technological, Scientific Olympics.
Right.
It's an arm of the NAACP.
Right. So this is a program that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, I was hooked.
Yeah.
And then when I went to the national competition, I was really hooked. But it's actually an opportunity for young folk. And this is a program that focuses on African-American students.
Yes.
I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yes.
Some units don't push it that way, don't run it that way. But this wasn't... a program that was established for African-American youth to level the playing field. And I choose to continue that legacy. There are 33 now categories in AXO, in the sciences, humanities, performing arts, visual arts, entrepreneurship, and I probably missed something. But we, for the first time this year, did our culinary program.
Yes.
Brand new. And the only thing different with the culinary program is that it's open to everybody, because that wasn't part of the legacy program.
Yeah.
It's new. The folk who are sponsoring this is new. So we had all white students participating in the culinary program, and they were awesome.
Yeah.
But AXO allows our students to really hone their gifts and get out there and see what other young folk are doing all across the country. And we are bringing back medals from the national competition.
We had
a bronze this year. We had a silver last year. And I tell you that if you have 1,000 folk, students participating, over 900 of those students are going to go home without a medal.
Yeah.
So getting a medal is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love it. So getting our kids activated in the academic, cultural, and technological space, which I think is really important, because oftentimes these are a lot of the first sets of programs that get cut in schools.
Yep.
These are the things that I don't think a lot of our students are encouraged to do, because we are mostly encouraged to get our students into jobs that will allow them to pay bills and be solvent and, you know, arts and culture. And a lot of those things are not the standard tracks that many of us are comfortable with.
Absolutely.
And so, Ellie, you, like me, have family members and loved ones that are matriculating in Flint. And I in the Flint public school system, and I'm a product of the Flint public school system, I tell people, Flint was once the model for community schools.
Absolutely.
It was the models. I was in a special magnet program that was housed at Flint Northern and Flint Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
So I did half of my day at Northern, and I did the other half of the day at Central. And I know there was a focus on science and mathematics and engineering. Mm-hmm. And I know I also had all of these cultural enrichment opportunities.
Right.
And I was involved in a young thespian group. And I, you know, was in plays. And I tell people I got a world-class education.
Absolutely.
Being in
Flint. Yes.
And so when I moved back to Flint as an adult and brought two high school-age children with me, I was saddened because the two high schools that I went to, neither one of them are open anymore.
Right. Right. And, you know, some of that has to do with what has happened in Flint, with our losing half of our population, losing our tax base, just, you know, stuff happening with GM. When GM closed down some of its plants, we lost close to 100,000 folk, you know.
Yeah, I try to tell people that because we lost 100,000 jobs.
Yeah.
So people can only be where they have jobs. If you can't work and stay gainfully employed, it's hard to stay in a city.
Absolutely.
You have to go where the employment is and where opportunity is. Yeah. And for most people, jobs are opportunity.
Absolutely.
So you were sharing with me, you said it was such a simple question. You said, did I tell you what happened to my grandson?
Yeah. Because I'm still
grappling. I was grateful because I didn't know what you were about to tell me. But I want to talk about it because we're now entering into a conversation looking at the black tax and the black tax on education and our youth is something that we absolutely need to address.
And so this thing really, it hurt me to my core because of my love, number one, for Flint Community Schools.
Yeah.
My grandson and granddaughter, who is now in her second year at Mott Middle College, 10th grader, so I'm really proud of her. And I'm proud of my grandson too, but my grandson was only in Flint Community Schools because I insisted. Because I served on the board, I said, how can I be a board member advocating for Flint Community Schools and my kids don't attend Flint Community Schools? So my daughter, you know, she allowed that to happen.
And what grade is your grandson in?
So he's seventh grade.
He's seventh grade, gotcha.
He's a very healthy, active, young African-American male. Mm-hmm. And he's a respectful young African. Now he gets into stuff just like everybody else, right? I have to check him. I'm a granny who checks.
Yeah.
Right? But when he came home from school on August, I think it was the 27th or 28th, I was sitting on the couch in his house. And when he walked through that front door, I looked at his face and he was ashed. He had a look on his face that's the only description I can give you. And I asked him, I said, what in the world? I called his name, but I have not in any of my conversations, I don't call his name. I haven't called her name.
Gotcha.
So I'm not sure that's going to continue. But I said, what in the world is wrong with you? He said, nothing. I said, okay. I let it go because I knew something was. His dad came in looking strange. I didn't say anything to his dad. Minutes after that, my daughter, his mom, called me, she said, did he tell you what happened to him at school? And I said, no, but I knew something happened. She said, one of his teachers called him the N-word. I said, what? One of his teachers called him the N-word, and they had an arrangement where he was allowed to take his phone to school, keep it in his book bag to call if there was an emergency. So he contacted his mom. Mm-hmm. Mom contacted his dad because I can tell you my daughter did not need to go to that school to see about him that day because mm-hmm. I would be up there seeing about both of them. Mm-hmm. She really didn't need to go. So his dad went up there, but it was after hours, so folk were not in place. The next day he took him back. And he never would tell me what this teacher said, just that she cursed him. And to back it up, the first day of school, he came home and said to me, Granny, our teachers are cussing at us up there. I said, no, they're not. Teachers are not doing it because they want their jobs. They're not doing that. Well, yeah, apparently they were. This particular teacher was. And so the next day, his dad took him up there, made a complaint with the principal. They pulled kids out of classrooms, got letters from the kids stating what the woman had said.
It was the same thing. The same thing that your grandson said.
Right.
The other kids corroborated.
Absolutely.
His version of what happened.
Absolutely. There were numbers of like 10, 15, 20 different little written notes of what had happened. His dad went through the notes with the principal. They read them. According to the principal, it was going to be shipped off to the HR department. They were going to handle it. We heard nothing.
And the teacher is still in the classroom.
She was in the classroom. She was out of the classroom for a minute. Then she was back in the classroom. She was out of the classroom. So I went to the board and told them, you need to check yourself because this is what happened. And when I went before the board, I told them she didn't call him the N-word. She called him a nigga.
I was about to say, the N-word is not, she didn't say sit down N-word. She said sit down, nigger.
She said,
She said
sit the F down, nigger. Nigga. And in my interpretation, when you are comfortable enough to say nigga, that's not the first time you've used that, because that's not the way it's spelled.
Absolutely not.
So I went there. I told them, look, at a minimum, I expected that she would have been reassigned upon investigation. Mm-hmm. Because number one, she had traumatized my grandson and those other students, because it's, I understand, I don't know exactly how many students in the classroom, but maybe three other, everybody else African-American. So they were traumatized. And sure, they say that. And so one of the excuses, well, you know, our kids say that. So what? It means something totally different.
When they say that peer-to-peer, when they say that amongst themselves, you forfeit your right.
Absolutely.
When you raise your hand to be a teacher.
Absolutely.
And be responsible Absolutely. For teaching and Absolutely. Nurturing and supporting Absolutely. And growing and developing our youth, you forfeit your right Absolutely. To say that.
So you don't get to say it, and you know you don't get the right to say it. So in that meeting with the board, I told them, look, I expect you to handle this. Because we put our children in your care. I have been a supporter of Flint Community Schools ever since I've been in Flint. If you don't handle this, we will. Mm. Absolutely, we will. And I was guaranteed by the superintendent. He finally called me. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the board president called me and apologized, because what I found out was that many folk didn't know anything about it. So there was a breakdown in their communication. Sure. And I found out the person who was over the HR department was out on some kind of leave. So I honestly don't believe anything was being done about that. I don't believe anything was being done. And none of us were being communicated with. So the superintendent said, I promise you, we will handle this. I will investigate this. I will get back and let you know. Well, he did not get back and let me know. So when I knew anything, he told me, when he called me, she's on administrative leave. When I knew anything, she was back in the classroom.
And in your grandson's classroom.
In my grandson's classroom. So I asked him, I said, well, so what is it like in the classroom? What do you do? He said, and this is what he did. He went inside and said, I just sit down in the class and I don't talk to her. How can he be in a classroom learning, not talking to a teacher, avoiding, you know? Because I'm thinking, what if, because he's a big guy, he's as tall as I am, he's a big 12-year-old. What if he had knocked her on her butt?
We would be having a different conversation trying to figure
trying
out
to get him out of jail.
Absolutely. We would be having a very different conversation.
Absolutely. So the fact that, and I know that there are not enough teachers. I know that there are problems. I know there's not enough money, but I am sorry. If this is what you have to do to keep the doors open, then I would be first in line to say, shut it down.
Yeah,
because you're not doing our kids. And when you traumatize, he doesn't even know he was trauma. It took him 4 days. He never said the words to me. He wouldn't say the words. He said, finally, he texted. I have the text. I said, if you can't say the words, you need to write it. You need to send it to me. He sent me a text, what she said.
Because probably for him, even if he had said that to his friends mm-hmm. in conversation mm-hmm. about each other, mm-hmm. recalling and recounting a conversation where that was said to him by a trusted adult,
absolutely
charged and tasked with his growth and betterment, is re-traumatizing.
Absolutely.
And the fact that that teacher remains in the classroom,
absolutely,
and it goes unanswered,
right,
is being re-traumatized,
absolutely,
every day.
So I think we deserve to know why. Why is she still in the class? What did you find? You haven't told me anything. Did you decide that my grandson lied? I don't think so. Those letters, those kids, everybody couldn't have created that. That there was no lie there.
Let me tell you what happened on our end, because I want to hear what has happened, mm-hmm. and then again, we're at the forefront. I want to talk about what we think the solutions are.
Right.
Because what I can guarantee you is this is taking a toll on your grandson.
Absolutely.
That if not addressed now,
yes,
the stress and the trauma,
yes,
will be embedded in him.
Absolutely.
And he will carry that with him.
And that's what I saw when he did this. He just
pulled back,
pulled
retreated.
He did.
Yeah, and we don't want that. Our children are constantly facing trauma. I just talked with Dr. Wisdom Powell about this, who deals specifically around stress and trauma, specifically trauma with boys and men of color. She said the one big thing that we need to do is have radical empathy for young boys and men of color.
Absolutely.
Because they don't get it anywhere.
And I'm feeling that. I am stressed. I don't trust myself to be, because I'm still stressed about the water situation. So, you know, having to keep all that stuff inside, right?
Yeah.
So what's the right way to handle it? I'm not a person to stomp and scream and cuss, and usually I know some cuss words, but I try not to use them, right? But something needs to be done.
Let me tell you what happened to my daughter. She goes to a private parochial school in Flint. Mm. That was the choice that we made because there was only one public high school to choose from. And when I looked, the performance of that high school wasn't sufficient for somebody who was on a college preparatory track. And I just couldn't lose the ground that we had gained in her 8 years of schooling up until that point.
Right.
And so I made a choice that I thought I would never make because I'm a product of public school.
Right.
My oldest daughter was a product of public school. My son was in public school until his very last year in high school when we moved to Flint. And so on her first or second day in this private parochial school, a new teacher, I think this was this teacher's first or second year teaching, said to all of the students, now, of course, she's my daughter. She's sitting in the front row, right? Because that's what she's
that's
trained.
That's what she does.
I'm like, that's where all the good stuff is happening,
right.
In the front row.
Right.
You got best access to the board. You got best access to the door if you need to come or go quickly.
Right.
Like, the front of the room is where you want to be.
Right.
So the teacher says, who here is Catholic? And she's sitting in the front row, so she doesn't raise her hand. And she, and they said, okay. And he says, who here is, you know, and he names other Muslim. Mm-hmm. And there's one young man in her school also that, in her class, who I think he might have had on a,
one of those.
Yeah, something that, you know, that adorns his head that kind of denotes he might be of Islamic faith. Etc. So he goes through this whole thing and he says, okay, so all of the non-Catholics raise your hand. And so, and she sort of sitting, you know, that seems weird. So she raises her hand and she looks over her shoulder and it's just her and the other young man who happens to be of Islam faith.
Right.
And I think he's Arab American.
Right.
And then all the other kids are snickering and snarling. They also happen to be the only two kids, you know, who are not white in the class,
right?
So the other kids are snickering and snarling, and somebody behind her says, oh, we know where they're going when they die. This is like her first or second day of school. She comes home. She is crushed.
Oh, my goodness.
This would be the first of many experiences that she would have of her otherness related to religion. Mostly what would transpire after that would be related to race. I don't have an answer, but I'm willing to share with you some things that I've learned about trying to remedy the impact that this has on our children.
Right.
But when she came home, I picked her up from school and I literally had dropped off this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, eager to learn young woman.
Right.
Who I picked up was a different human
absolutely
being.
And you can see it.
I saw it the second she came moping down those front steps.
Yes.
I said, what is wrong? Nothing. It took me about a day and a half and of course you know your child, to figure out what had happened and to get the story from her.
Yes.
By the time I got the story, I went to the school, and the school had already moved my child into a different classroom.
And you knew nothing about it.
And I knew nothing about it. And I threw a fit.
Oh, see.
I said, not only Is she going back in that classroom? The teacher humiliated her and had completely inappropriate behavior.
Yes.
And he did it from the front of the room.
Wow.
He's going to apologize to my child and admit that his behavior was wrong to her and the other student from the same position. You did it from the front of the room. You're going to get it straight from the front of the room.
Absolutely.
And my child ain't leaving. I want him to go to another classroom.
Absolutely.
And I want a different teacher to come in the room. He should be moved, not her.
Right.
Unless that's her choice.
Right.
If she chooses to move, she can move. But if not, he's the problem. He needs to go.
Absolutely.
And they brought her back. She came back to that classroom. He had to apologize from the front of the room. He had to acknowledge from the front of the room that what he did was wrong. And then they could have a conversation in the room.
Right.
And I wanted that for my child's healing.
Right.
See, I said, don't let somebody embarrass you or humiliate you from the front of the room and apologize in private.
Absolutely.
We let our teachers off the hook. So for that woman to say what she said
right.
to your grandson.
Absolutely.
And then come back in that classroom
right.
and not get it straight. She said what she said to the whole classroom.
Right.
I don't care if you're black, non-black, white, different religion,
right.
whatever.
Right.
What she did was disrespectful to the entire
Absolutely.
Classroom.
Absolutely.
And she needs to be held to account in front of that entire classroom.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that I said, you know, not feeling like I was not in control of the situation, but knowing that this is not going to go away quietly.
No.
It is not going to be swept under the rug, which is what they expect, or which is what has happened in the past, because you will not make me believe this is the first time it happened.
Absolutely not.
Stuff like that happens all the time. I've heard folks say, oh, that's a school full of kids who've given up already, or they are misfits, or no, they're not.
They dehumanize our children.
Yeah. Enough is enough.
They place them lower on the rankings of value.
Absolutely.
And I tell people all the time, black parents want the same thing
right.
for our kids. Black grandparents
Absolutely.
Want the same thing for their grandbabies that white parents want, that Hispanic parents want, that Arab American families want, that all of us want the best for our children.
But Deborah, how ironic is it that it happened to your daughter? You.
This has
They not- didn't know. That, they didn't know.
That is the that would be, little did I know, that would be the beginning.
See.
The beginning of 4 years.
Yes.
Of, I would almost describe hell for my daughter.
See.
I have had to twist myself inside out. I am now in the process because I had to give her the option.
Yeah.
Do you want to leave this place?
Right. Right.
And it really is her choice.
Right.
Do you want to leave this place?
Right.
Her brother was there with her for 1 year. That provided a lot of buffer and cover. What were our options? To take her into a school outside of Flint?
Yeah.
That's also slightly problematic. And she chose to stay there because academically she thought she would get what she
right.
needed. We ultimately have decided now that she's in her senior year, we don't regret the choice because we've been very intentional that she has what we call in the moment activism.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's a choice.
Right.
She doesn't have to take on everything. She doesn't have to. What I realize though is schools that tolerate that behavior, that school has a lot of issues around race and racism.
Absolutely.
And staff that are completely inept and unwilling to deal
absolutely.
With
Absolutely. But my point is, your position, your being a person, a parent who will not accept it.
Who's
they
active,
are used
who's educated,
to parents.
I'm paying
absolutely.
Tuition.
Absolutely.
It
so
doesn't
it,
matter
so,
though.
But,
all they see is her brown skin.
But they will see it differently because you're not going to sit down and take it. And that's my point. My activism, while I'm quiet about it, I'm not quiet.
Yeah.
I'm figuring out on a day-to-day, making a good cup of coffee to figure out, okay, what the heck am I going to do about this? Because I'm not satisfied.
Yeah.
You know, that it happened to my son, my grandson.
Yeah.
With the connections that I have, with the folk who are ready to stomp down there to the board meetings, you know, if that's the answer, we'll do that. But what, you know, doing something.
I will tell you, I don't like the notion, and I agree with you, that we are having our experience, because she deals with it a lot from her classmates and other students in that student body, mm-hmm. who I can only imagine many of them are getting it from their parents, mm-hmm. and at home,
absolutely,
environments, because racism is learned behavior.
Yep,
it's
I believe that.
It's either intentional or even if it's unconscious and it's just the water you swim in, right?
Yes,
it's learned behavior. And so what I figured out is I'm looking for partners in outrage at the school, because there are some parents there who've not only not taught their children that, but have taught their children something else.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so she has had the opportunity to impact a lot of other students. And she's sort of created, if you will, a small movement there, because what I also realize is mostly it is the young white boys who are dominating everybody in the school.
Yeah.
They're doing it to the white girls. So you've got all of these acts of aggression and violence and some sexual violence, much of which is underreported, not reported. And when it is, it's not handled appropriately.
Yes.
Because if they'll tolerate racism,
they'll tolerate
a lot of that other
stuff too. You're absolutely right.
And so what I do feel like, and it bothers me, is yes, she is a mother that's outspoken, but the reason I've always been an advocate for public schools is because having my kids in public school ensured that every kid in that school had an advocate.
Chance. Absolutely.
Because my kids are more apt to tell me what they've experienced with, if one of your grandson, this teacher had said this to one of his friends, he might have been more, you know, forthcoming with telling you. Like I said, it's re-traumatizing when he speaks about it for himself.
And I had to realize that and back off and not, you know, but what I told him was that I need to know exactly what she said, because I can't fight with some similar words. Yeah. I need to know exactly what she said, you know, because this, and I told him, this is not going to go away. I did an interview with one of the local TV stations, and it hasn't aired because they wanted to interview my grandson. I said, his mom says, absolutely not. His face is not going to be the face of this thing, because we don't know what the repercussions can be.
The repercussions, the same conversation I've had with my daughter, I would be curious to see, and I would be happy to put them in touch to talk privately. But I said, it's your choice. You don't have to run for every child of color in the Flint school system or in your school or anybody. You to thine own self be true.
Absolutely.
First.
Absolutely.
Are you okay? And as her mother, that is the thing that I have to keep checking in on. And people don't realize the different treatment that black and brown children get in the school system. And it makes, I'm infuriated because that child and all those children, my child to me is the world.
Yes.
The thought that anybody will call her a nigger.
Right.
Anything less than.
Absolutely.
Who and what she is, which is an extraordinary, amazing, brilliant human being.
Yes.
Who deserves to be respected and loved and nurtured for nothing more than she is.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that is what is missing. And that is the black tax on our children.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, because I think
every child. And it's real.
It's real. And every child deserves the opportunity to just be human.
Right.
And our kids get robbed of that so young. Right. Before they just get to be a human being, it gets imposed on them. And they become aware of their blackness in a way that I don't think is nurturing for them. We give that to them. But then the world and teachers and interactions when they get treated differently at the mall, or when they are more apt to have police encounters
following them,
takes that away from them.
Right.
And it makes their blackness something that feels like a burden.
Absolutely.
It's a tax that they have to pay.
It is.
It's unfair and it's inhumane.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And one of the things I want to do is follow up with some of the parents.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing how they will react to it, if they've forgotten about it, you know, what the impact was on their kids. I don't know. But that's something I definitely want to do. But something has to be done. And the district has to know that the handling of this was not the way it should have been done.
Yeah.
At least there should have been some communication. You don't just move forward and pray that we let it go. I'm not a let it go person.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, our people are real quick to hand things over to the Lord. Mm. I think this one's in your hands.
Well, so let me say that the only reason I wasn't in front of the teacher the next day is because I did talk to the Lord. So, he helps me, work things out.
Yeah, right? Sure.
So, be grateful that my daughter listens to me.
Yeah.
Because there were a few things that she wanted to do personally.
Well, I'll tell you this, where I like to hit people and what I'd love to do is I think racists should be unemployed.
Mm. How about that?
I think racism should cost you your job.
How about that?
I think it should cost you your job.
I do too.
So I don't understand. And I will tell you my experience. And this is going to have to be a two-parter, Ella, because we got to get in action, and then we got to come back.
Absolutely.
And then we have to also, when we come back, talk about, and I'll see if I can get my daughter to talk about this. When I tell you it hits so close to home, I've had to really focus with her on the healing. See, that's the whole thing about being taxed.
Yeah.
And paying this excess price
right.
for being black.
But that
takes a toll on you.
Absolutely.
The solutions, I'm telling you, you have to have a paper trail.
Yeah.
Whatever conversations you're having need to be backed up with things in writing.
Yeah.
You have to put your concerns in writing. You have to send it to everybody that matters. You have to CC the people that matter.
Absolutely.
And you have to be a demand for getting the resolve in writing.
Absolutely.
And it's also fair to ask for what you want.
Absolutely.
I would like for this teacher to not be eligible for employment in the Flint school system. I would like for this teacher to get, don't get me wrong, it's not your job to do their
Absolutely.
Job. But if there's a direct request, make that known. It doesn't mean that you're going to get that.
Absolutely.
But at least it's been known and you will get a direct response to what your request is.
So the beauty of that is that I wrote, when I visited the school board, I didn't trust myself to talk.
Yeah.
I wrote it.
Yeah.
And I read it. And MLive recorded it.
Yeah.
And printed it.
Wonderful.
Hello.
Yes.
And printed it.
The media as a tool that works in our favor.
I didn't even know the woman was there.
Yeah.
And she contacted me. Somebody did. They read it. And folk were, you know, calling me and asking me about it.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. But and those were the things I did. It was step by step. This is what I would have expected. But this is what this is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
She should not stand in front of a group of kids ever anywhere.
Yes.
Not down the road,
yep.
which is what you normally do.
Yeah.
I'm bidding for all kids.
Yeah.
She gave up her right to do that when she allowed those words to roll off her lips.
I got it. Ella, we're going to have to come back. When I get back in the Flint, I know we out here blazing the trail.
Yes.
I know you've been very activated and engaged in the American Public Health Association. I love you and honor you and acknowledge you and appreciate you for all the great work that you're doing on behalf of all Flint youth. My heart goes out to you. I have tremendous empathy because to have it hit so close to home.
Yes.
No, I don't want it for any kid.
Absolutely.
I don't want it for any kid. And when I do feel hurt. I've had things that have happened in the media. I remember when Trayvon Martin was killed. That impacted me so
Absolutely.
Hard. I kept looking at that boy. I kept seeing my own son.
Yes.
I hear this story. My own hurt and trauma gets reactivated around what my child has experienced and some of the things that she's shared that her friends have experienced. Why?
Right.
Because as a parent and somebody that has some power and influence in the world, I keep asking myself, what can I do?
Absolutely.
Little Debbie from C. Pleasant wants to go up to school and whip somebody's tail. But I realize that's not the answer.
That's not the answer.
That's not going to solve anything.
Absolutely.
What I want to do is put systems and structures in place so that racism is unemployable.
Absolutely.
Racism should be unemployable and it should be unallowable
Absolutely.
In the school system.
That's where I am. And to help them understand whatever decisions they made, whatever justifications they made, however they made this okay, they need to know that it's not okay.
Yeah.
It is not okay.
Yeah.
And we're not going to accept it.
Well, Ella, I appreciate you. We're going to be back for part two.
Yes, Lord.
And we're going to talk offline. And we've been sort of rolling with it. So we got a couple other things, Ella, that I'm going to be talking to you about in the weeks that come. But for this topic, for being willing to share yourself and to share your story and to let people know that this is real and there are real people behind
Absolutely.
It, I appreciate you for that.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity because it's time for it to get out there.
It is time for it to be out there. This one will be accelerated.
Absolutely.
I'm ready. Thank you for joining us at the forefront, Black Tax with our Black children in education. Dr. Deborah Furholden and my favorite guest, Ella Greenwood.
Absolutely.
At the forefront. We're out.